Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And we're here on a regular basis bringing you conversations about, I honestly do believe the conversations we have are all about changing the world for the better for everyone. Now, I am not taking on the whole world all at once, okay? I'm just taking bites, doing what I can in my little corner of the world and sharing that, interestingly enough, never thought about this before, but interestingly enough, globally, because we're also on the internet and we stream live these programs, their podcasts, their video casts. I'll share all of that with you later. But the reason why today is a very interesting program is because we're going to be talking with a gentleman who is ostensibly a home builder. But his story, and I thought about this when I was coming into the studio to do the interview, this gentleman's life is a series of reruns. He's gone from rags to riches, to rags to riches, to rags to riches, and he's very successful now as a home builder. His name is Jose Berlinga, and I want to thank you so much for being with us, because I know that there are a lot of people out there, Jose, who they feel extremely challenged. And certainly the number of people that are listening may be living like me, just like me, paycheck to paycheck. It's on the one hand, a frustration. It's a stressor. But at the same time, and I've shared this on the program many times, Jose, I know that the Creator is going to take care of me. I'm not worried about it from that standpoint. And I'm 64 years old, so I'm still here. And I've been through all that stuff. And you're still here after going through the series of cycles you went through. Thanks for being with us.
Richard, thank you so much for having me in your show. I'm happy to be here and definitely to share some stories.
Now, you have a book out that we're also going to be obviously promoting and discussing with our audience as well. The Business of Home Building. Now, folks, this is not coming from this isn't coming from an architect per se. Although, Jose, are you an architect?
No, I'm an entrepreneur, which is part of this interesting subject. And you said it correct. Mostly known for being a builder, a home builder. Mm-hmm. But what not a lot of people know is that I've been involved in dozens of businesses, in dozens of industries. And that is my true passion, starting businesses and building businesses. So this book is really not about how to build a home, but how mm-hmm. to build a business that builds the homes, or a business that could build essentially anything, since there are some fundamental similarities in the process of starting business.
Now, I am familiar with a lot of different home building companies. When I was a kid growing up, of course, we heard of John F. Long. That was one of them in particular in the Phoenix area. But you have Tricon Homes, is that correct? It's and you're the co-founder of Tricon Homes, which is an industry leader, and you're raking in, so to speak, your revenue. Let me put it that way. Your revenue is upwards of $100 million. What, a year?
Yes. And let me just make a small correction. That company, we phased out of it as we retired. Mm-hmm. Essentially retired out of the business for a while and shifted little by little into other sectors of real estate, and to commercial and multifamily and investment properties and all that good stuff. And by the way, incidentally, I still build a lot of homes. A lot of people mm-hmm. think that I stopped building homes. No, we retired. We pretty much stopped operating Tricon basically for the only purpose of just starting to take it easy and enjoying life a little more. But soon enough, as you know, sometimes it gets difficult to just completely retire.
Yeah.
And little by little, I started getting back into this investment and that investment and this development. And before you know it, again, I'm I'm building a bunch of stuff and doing a lot of different things related to construction and real estate and to other things.
Yeah, I have. I was born into a family of six children. I'm the eldest male, but I'm third in line behind two sisters. All of them are ostensibly retired, even those who are younger than me. My brother, who is younger than me, worked for Disney for many, many years. He's retired. My two younger sisters, one was in teaching. I think they're either on the cusp of 60 or in their 60s. And I am the only one who says the only retiring I'm going to do is put new tires on my car. I love what I do. It sounds to me like, in spite of the way you phrase it, and I do understand what you're referring to in terms of the different businesses like Tricon, you don't really have any necessarily any intention of retiring either from not so much home building, but entrepreneurism. Is that a fair statement that?
That's a very accurate statement,
Yeah.
yes.
So what are, now entrepreneur, obviously, but are you also, would you also consider yourself a salesman?
Very much so. They come hand in hand. You mostly have to sell yourself when you're a when you're an entrepreneur. You have to believe in your mission and what you're doing and how you're going to go about it. And if you don't have that outgoing personality and an identity of a salesperson, I do think it makes it difficult to be a an entrepreneur, particularly if you're not a brilliant person, which I don't consider myself. I consider myself a hard-working, persistent individual. I did not invent anything. When you're a creator, when you create some software or a new technology or something that possesses some intellectual rights, now you don't need perhaps to be such a good salesperson. You just have a magical project, a magical product that can catapult you to the next level. I wasn't blessed with anything like that. I had to just grind, work hard on very basic industries that are highly competitive, like restaurants and oil and gas or trading, investments that are very, very traditional, home building, real estate, where the competition is massive. So the only way to go around it when you're not an inventor, let's say, somebody who has a very unique product that nobody else has, the only way to compensate it is by being very good at selling yourself, selling your product, and very persistent and very hardworking.
Yeah. You are originally from Mexico City, correct?
Yeah.
Years ago, early in my career, I was working for a Christian radio station. And there's a point to this because of what we talked about before we started. These gentlemen came in and they spoke pretty good English, but mostly Spanish. They were from Mexico. They wanted to do an overnight Spanish music and program on our religious station, which I thought was interesting. And obviously the model at our station was, if you've got the money, we'll put you on. But they would come into the radio station, and we're talking about at the transmitter site, not at the broadcast site, like in the middle of town. This was out where the tower was back in the 80s and 90s, in suits. Dark suits, nice white shirt, beautiful tie. I mean, the whole shoot and match, right?
The man in black, huh?
Men in essence, men in black. And I was working with a gal who initially I had insulted by making the comment that, oh, so you're from Mexico. And she turned to me and gave me the stink eye and says, I am not from Mexico. My family is from Spain. So she made a very distinct point of that. But these gentlemen, of course, were from Mexico. So I said, first of all, I apologized. I says, but these guys that are coming in, boy, they seem so arrogant, so full of themselves. She says, you need to take another look. That is not arrogance. That is confidence. Confidence.
There's a fine line, I suppose. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, they were the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet. I never had a problem with them, even communicating with them. And I now work for a radio station. Well, I've been working for 18 years for the same radio station that was just bought by a corporation that has 48 other all Spanish speaking music stations. We're the only English station in the in its network.
Yeah.
Many of its employees, the people that I work with in terms of getting things done, like the engineer and so forth, one of them speaks fairly good English, and he has already made it clear to me, says, Richard, you need to, if you're going to communicate with me verbally, face-to-face, you need to slow down, because I have difficulty understanding what you're saying. Most people, even those who are fluent in English, have trouble understanding. But you're wearing a suit and tie. For those who are not watching YouTube, you're wearing a suit and tie.
I am, and I enjoyed. We were talking about it. I like dressing up. It's just kind of part of my activities. And I feel good about it.
And I know that when I wear a suit and tie, when I put on a nice shirt and a tie and so forth, I feel different. I feel there's a certain level of empowerment. Not power and control kind of thing, but just like, oh yeah, man, I could do anything.
Yeah, you feel official, like you're what you're doing is important. It gives a little bit of meaning to what you're doing, or at least in my perception.
Yeah. Is this something that you grew up with, or is this something that came along as you went through the highs and lows of entrepreneurism?
No, I'm probably at an age where I still saw that formality in business and certain activities. You and I were talking about how people used to get dressed up to get on a plane or events and things like that. And I still have a little bit of that school where I associate getting dressed up with doing things of importance to me. I grew up with it. I saw a lot of examples of successful people that I wanted to replicate and be like the mentors and people that I looked up to, and it was always attractive for me to try to dress up. Not obviously not every day now, because the world has gotten a lot more casual, but it is important to me. And you're right. Just to comment on there, you know, Mexico is an interesting place too, where although now I'm more American Texan, I've spent more years of my life in the U.S. as I have in Mexico. I left Mexico when I was a teenager, and to go to the university here in the United States, and there were always links with the U.S., which I have I truly have enjoyed living here, and I still visit Mexico quite a bit. And there are a lot of people from Europe, from different parts of the world. So yes, some you know, to me, I am proud to be both American and Mexican in the different aspects of my life and my career, to understand both cultures, to identify what are some of the things that are important to me in those cultures. But I can see how some people can really attempt to identify themselves more from their original background more than where they grew up.
Yeah.
And that can be tricky. And then building something that I've seen is obviously something that we all have to learn. And I always give this advice: when you go to a new place, when you move, for example, those people that came to the US to start a business, I always recommend, before you start or venture into any type of new business, learn it, because we tend to think that we can operate here in the US if we are smart and if we know how to put a business together, that it's going to work the same here than in Mexico, than in Spain, than in France. And that is highly incorrect. The way to operate, the way that business is conducted here and in Asia, in the Middle East, mentalities, systems, structures, procedures are completely different. And we all need to spend a little time learning them, because having an idea and having a great idea is very different than actually executing it. I think you and I have enough experience where we know better than the easy part is to have a great idea. Executing it accurately and successfully is what's truly difficult. And we underestimate that when we go to a new place and a new environment. So
I interviewed a woman some years ago on doing business in China in particular, and most specifically. And to sum up much of what she said, you can take your idea, as you talk about, you can go to China. And if you do not honor and respect the customs, or you misspeak in one way or the other, one of two things may happen. You will wind up in jail or deported. And I think that is not just in China, but she was actually a little broader than that. Mostly in the Asian countries, Japan and Taiwan and Vietnam and Southeast Asia and so forth.
Yeah.
And the same thing is true if you go to the Middle East, to the Middle Eastern countries, or if you go to Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or if you go to, how can I put this?
Even Latin America.
Yeah, exactly.
You go to different parts of Europe, Western Europe, Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the cultural aspects, but even the way to negotiate. When you negotiate from different people from different parts of the world, it is always to your advantage to understand their culture, to understand how they think, how they operate. And sometimes we take that for granted and we go straight to business without really understanding the culture and identifying with the people that you're working with. It's highly important. I believe that the same goes with your team, with your employees, with people that you surround yourself with. You have to understand what drives each one of us in order to help us work better and become more successful as a team.
Yeah. The business of home building, how to start and operate a residential construction company. That is the subtitle there of the book that Jose Barlanga has joined us to share, but also his insights and his life as we continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story. The book was released back in at the first part of May 2024. And we're actually kind of excited to talk to you because, as I mentioned up front, there are a lot of folks, and I kind of find myself in that category sometimes. I usually am a very optimistic person. We talk about giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. And in some of our conversations that I've had, we talk about, all the choices you've made up to this point have brought you right where you are in your life, and that all the choices you'll make from this point forward will take you to where you will be in the future. And one of my guests said, well, let me add a little addendum to that about the second part of that. He said that is true. However, you need to also consider whatever you perceive the future to be, what you think the future will be, will determine the choices that you make. Now, I am not a pessimist. I don't believe that we're coming to the end of the world at any time soon, regardless of a lot of the stuff that's going on in the world right now. I honestly do believe that there's a lot of good in the world. There's a lot of beauty in the world. It is said, and I tend to agree 99.9% of the time, that I live in one of the most beautiful parts of the country, if not the world, as well as one of the most expensive. And yet, I'm not making a six-digit figure, far be it from that. And yet, I'm still here. I'm still doing what I love to do. You said you moved from Mexico to the United States to go to university when you were a teenager. What were some of the obviously maybe one of the biggest challenges was obviously the difference in culture as well as language. How did you approach that as a teenager? Because here you are today and you have all of this knowledge, this understanding, this wisdom. But as a teenager, we usually think that we know it all when we know nothing. And we're trying to acclimate, and it's really challenging. So tell us about your beginnings here.
It was exciting for me. It was, I had always a love, an interest in the United States as a first world power since I was a little kid. The first couple of times that I ever came to the US, it was amazing to me. I fell in love with this country. The grandiosity from the highways, the airports, the structures, the construction, the people, the order, the cleanliness. I have a lot of pride in how this country operates. And I always wanted to fulfill my dreams of building something, of bringing my love for entrepreneurship and combining it with this nation, with the opportunities that this nation has to offer. So when the time came to be able to go to college and of course be able to attend to a US university, I immediately took the opportunity to also start a business. I couldn't wait. It was just in my nature to skip. I didn't want to plan too much. I didn't want to wait too much. I didn't want to graduate and then start thinking about what to do. I knew that I wasn't sure of how to go about it, but I also knew that I didn't want to wait until I figure it all out. Sometimes our life can go by trying to plan for it and trying to have a perfect plan of attack, the right job, the right industry, the right activity, and opportunities may go by if you overthink them. So the moment I had a chance to be here, I have to be honest, nothing concerned me, nothing worried me about this transition. I could barely speak English. Interestingly enough, a lot of people tell me that I don't have much of an accent. I made it a point to really effort myself to even apply the right sounds, so that now people are not sure where I'm from. They go, I hear a little bit of an accent. I just don't know where it's from. And I just immediately applied myself to first learning, understanding the system, understanding the culture, and how to go about it. And little by little, one business took me from here to there to the next, which leads to the other subject of, yes, it was not easy by any means. Something that's fascinating to me that I've learned over my lifetime is that all of us, when we're kids, I think this applies to pretty much the majority of the planet, we all grow up with some dream, with desires, with wishes of something, of achieving, accomplishing certain things. We see ourselves as grown-ups in a certain position, in a certain job, or having achieved whatever it is that we have in our imagination. But then, here's a fun part. At some point, we get there and reality kicks in. All of a sudden, we start facing the real world, whether it's a job, the corporate ladder, whether it's starting a business, whether it's raising capital, we start running into all of these obstacles. And that is when a big bulk of the world, of the population, starts forgetting their dreams and saying, whoops, I guess this is not for me. It's just too hard. My particular circumstances are not working in my favor. I think that this success thing may work for someone else who's lucky, who has different characteristics, who has maybe different talents, but I don't think this is going to work for me. So we start letting go of those dreams and those wishes and hopes and opportunities that we thought we would have, and start coming to terms with reality and just living. I think that one of my few assets, because as I said, I'm not very talented, I'm not very smart, I'm not very qualified. I just never gave up. I just said, you know what? I went in knowing that it was not going to be easy.
Mm.
And just knowing that I was going to have to put the time, the sacrifice, the effort, the energy, and that there would be numerous setbacks. If you go in knowing that, somehow we always think that life and that circumstances are tougher for us personally, that there's something in our universe making it harder for us to succeed. And we pinpoint on that, on those obstacles, and somehow we stop trying without truly understanding that, no, things are difficult for everyone. Very, very few. It's very rare when someone got an easy way out of difficulties or poverty or a tough upbringing.
Yeah.
It's very rare. And like they say, be careful what you wish for, because those people that had it easy, I bet you they have other problems that you don't want.
Yeah, exactly.
So be glad if your only issues are financial. Be glad if your only issues are obstacles to make a better future for yourself. If that's your problem, wow, you're in good shape.
Yeah, exactly. So,
Yeah. And I always knew that also that I was already successful just by having, you know, food in my refrigerator. Sometimes we lose perception of what wealth is.
Mm-hmm.
We lose the point of reference of what truly is poverty and what is wealth. And when we start comparing ourselves now, particularly with this world of Instagram and social media, where we compare ourselves with a life that is not real, we tend to think, oh my God, I'm a loser. I can't do this. I'm not where I thought I would be. I'm not the success that I thought I could be. And we start comparing ourselves with very unrealistic circumstances, which are not true. We all have just the fact that we have a roof over our head, just the fact that we have, you know, food and in a very comfortable, convenient life in most parts of the world. This is where the traveling and the experience of being around the world teaches you that very few people have access to these very fundamental things, even to clean water. So when you start with the notion, number one, that, hey, I'm already ahead of the game, I'm already a pretty lucky person, let's appreciate that. And number two, hey, if I want to move to the next level and move forward and become something more than what I am, it's not going to be easy. Get it through your mind. Just know that it's going to be tough. If we think it's just going to happen and it's going to be a walk in the park and a rosy garden of fun, you're just unrealistic. You have unrealistic expectations. You ask anybody who's ever earned a medal, a trophy, or any sort of competition and become the best at what they are or the best within their field, they will explain this over and over. It was a horrible level of sacrifice.
Yeah.
But you just have to get a little comfortable with pain.
Yeah.
Pain is a great thing.
It's a great teacher. It absolutely can be a great teacher. But it also tells us, too, that we don't have to stay in that pain. Learn from it and then move on. Because
use it. Exactly. Use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
Learn from it. And correct. Don't keep making the same mistakes, or then, you know, that's your fault.
Then you can be classified as one who is, because you keep making the same mistakes, you're a little insane, because doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, that is the definition thereof. Jose Berlanga is my guest here on the program, and we're talking. I find this fascinating. Now, I'm going to say this because normally I'm usually the youngest one in the room, but you're still a young man and again, I'm going by appearance and conversation here, you know.
Well, you look like a young guy. I'm in my mid 50s. I'm 55.
Okay.
I in some aspects I feel very young. In some others, I feel like I've been here for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely too many experiences, and the good and the bad ones.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that kind of struck me as you were sharing, especially the challenges, the adversities in your life, especially coming up from Mexico City and wanting to pursue your dreams, which is part of what this program is about, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. One of the things that I know is a big bugaboo with a lot of people, and in the United States specifically, is this whole argument over what is referred to as white privilege. Now, I used to consider myself as white, but then I had a DNA test, and I am a very large percentage Native American, North, Central, and South American Native American, which I thought was real interesting. I am 1% European Jew, okay? So I can claim that part too. I start taking a look at some of the stories that have been coming out over the last couple of decades of some of the, shall we say, entrepreneurial endeavors of people of different races. I remember the story has come out in the last 10 years about what was referred to, and I want to say it was in Arkansas. It was called Black Wall Street. And and they had created the blacks in that area. I had created a very wealthy town. I mean, everybody was doing very well, doing their business and so forth. And there were some people that didn't care much for it. And we won't go there. But then you have other people of other races. I for example, you know, obviously these days there's a lot of anti-Semitism going on. And of course, arguments over how the Jews are controlling the media and the financial industries. And I'm going, shouldn't they actually be given credit for the fact that they did that? I mean, my goodness, look at what they've accomplished and look at what you get to watch on TV and look at the money that you get to have and the interest you're earning on your savings and so on and so forth. I mean, it's just like, and then, of course, because I grew up in Arizona and we have had many Native American tribes around us on reservations. And all of a sudden, these casinos started popping up all over the place. And I'm going, hey, congratulations. That's wonderful. Now you have a means by which to, you know, hopefully help your tribe and so forth.
Yeah.
And it's like, why aren't we giving? And I don't want to break it down into race per se, because again, we are talking about individuals, because there are people in those same races who are still struggling and they haven't found their life's purpose and so forth. But it's like, from an optimistic standpoint, come on, let's give them the credit that they deserve, the recognition and the congratulations for achieving what's been achieved. And I'm thinking that from your standpoint, you in particular, I'm sure you had moments, as you already shared, where you didn't feel too congratulatory towards yourself because of maybe some of those challenges, the things just didn't go quite the way you wanted. But I also hope that when you did make those achievements, those goals were met and so forth, you said, all right, you didn't necessarily hold a parade down Main Street, but you did a little cheer for yourself saying, I did it. I with a lot of help from the people around me, but I did it. I made it to this level.
Yeah. I've done something with my life. And I think I'm a good person to answer this from different angles, because I completely understand that some people have more challenges or tougher challenges than others, and sometimes the natural thing, the easiest thing, is to associate it with race, with our background, with our religion, with our cultural identity, so on and so forth. It's the easiest way for us to say, oh, my life is harder because of this and this and that. Everyone, in my experience, everyone has different challenges. They're not always obvious, apparent to the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We all have them, and we all have a tough time, whether we agree or understand it or not. I'm a good example, because I had something very similar to say that perhaps someone with the ethnic obstacle that appears to be the problem. I had it with my scars, okay? I'm just gonna be blunt.
Mm-hmm.
I was treated very, very different. There was, when I was growing up, diplomacy didn't exist. Political correctness does not exist. People would, and by the way, now my scars after dozens and dozens of surgeries, they don't look as dramatic as they used to. But in my earlier years in my career, the focus was my scars. Can you do the job? Look at, how you look. It was even questioned. Can you even talk to people? Can you achieve these things, being that you have physical challenges? And it was a big issue for me. Without getting into thousands of stories and moments that I went through, but I understood that these objections needed to be overcome, not by me focusing on why I couldn't do something. Oh, I can't do this because people are telling me that I look this way and that I have these obstacles. So I had to generate the solutions. I had to ignore what people were looking at and create my own opportunities and prove it to myself that regardless of my circumstances and my conditions, I was able to succeed. So I began to turn negative things into positive. All of those problems that we see, even from the way we look, even from our level of intelligence, they can be turned into assets. And most people don't associate their deficiencies with opportunities. Even down to, for example, in addition to a lot of my physical problems that turn into real obstacles, I was also ADD, highly ADD, and I had dyslexia, and I was a daydreamer. I grew up in a hospital staring at the ceiling of a room where I developed my ability to space out while most kids were learning how to read and learning how to learn. I was recovering in a hospital for years, and I had all these weaknesses. I had a lot of anxiety. I had a lot of mental disorders. Well, guess what? Little by little, I started training myself to use some of these deficiencies. For example, my ADD, my attention deficit, I turn it into an attention surplus. Most of us ADD people think that it's a weakness, think that it's a problem. Well, no. Instead of a very attentive person, the analogy would be they can run a marathon. They can apply attention for a long period of time. ADD people, what we don't know about those guys like myself is that we can only apply our attention for a very small period of time, but it's very powerful. That moment, when something draws your attention is very powerful. And if you utilize it correctly, you can turn yourself into a leader, into a fast decision acting machine. The same happened with, for example, with my anxiety. I was highly anxious. Well, one day, little by little, I understood how to use that anxiety by getting things done. You know, one of the biggest solutions, one of the biggest medicines for anxiety is to knock off things off your checklist, off your list. So I started creating tools to compensate for my weaknesses from one to the other and utilizing the negative to help me achieve goals. I don't think most of us think like that. Most of us start thinking of the why I'm not able to get there instead of what do I have? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? And how do I use those weaknesses to my advantage? I assure you that most of them, even the distractive personality, or perhaps my inability to connect with a lot of personalities, force me to develop my ability to get along with others because I wanted to be accepted. That turned me into a better salesperson. Because all of a sudden, I wanted people to get to know me better, not because of how I looked, but because of what I was able to do. And so on and so forth. You ask, and what an irony, because you even ask a very good looking girl or a girl, a guy or a girl. And they will tell you, you know, most people don't treat me with respect, or don't give me don't give my intelligence respect, because they think that I get everything so easy just because I'm attractive. You know, even those particular personalities have those weaknesses and insecurities. So somehow we all want to be better understood and better taken in consideration because of what we're able to do and what we're able to achieve, rather than for how we look. So I think there's so much. This is such a complex subject, but the moral of the story is, stop looking at these objections. Stop thinking of why I'm not getting where I want to be.
It's fascinating because of what you share. I can relate to. I personally was born with I was born legally blind with three congenital issues, nystagmus, stigmatism, and bilateral cataracts. And I had all those wonderful little surgeries as a kid growing up. And I probably will never forget. Probably the last one I had was not a happy camper going down the corridor on the gurney being taken in. And then I told my ophthalmologist before they started, I said, because they were going to put that rubber mask with the ether. I says, if you do this, I won't play with you anymore. But in spite of all of that, I got into an industry that I hadn't even thought about, that I was going to need my eyes for, you know, reading of scripts and news stories and so on and so on and so on. And in 1996, I was blessed that technology sort of caught up with me. And though I had lost the vision in my left eye due to glaucoma, I had a lens implant put in my right eye. And it was one of the most fascinating experiences because I was totally awake. I could see everything that was going on. And what was I doing instead of lying there quietly, just letting them do their thing? I was sharing with them a recipe for a hamburger that I had come up with. And then they told me, you know, you really need to stay quiet because we need to focus on what we're doing here.
You were too excited.
I was very much so. And then I started getting reports from friends of mine going back years. Matter of fact, one of our, one of the gentlemen now, one of the kids that I grew up with, he was the eldest male in the family next door to us. And I wanted to get into this also in terms of your philosophy, but I was born and raised Catholic, but the neighbors were a family of Mormons. I didn't learn until I was working for the Christian radio station the hatred that the Mormons had for the Catholics. But we got along great. Well, not too long ago, in communicating with one of his brothers, he transmitted to his brother, who then sent it on to me, one of the most beautiful expressions of acceptance that I have ever heard. And I'm not even going to take the time. I know I have it saved on my phone, but I'm not going to take the time. The essence of it was, he never saw me as visually impaired, let alone legally blind, because I was out there playing with the rest of the kids like everybody else. We played kickball in my parents' front yard. We raced around the neighborhood. We were not a gang like the gangs of today. But the neighbors, they had no problem with us because they knew that the noise would die down as soon as the sun went down, because we'd go home, go to dinner, and so forth. And he shared that. He says, if you ever get a chance to share this with him, let him know that I was always so impressed by that and him. And I loved what someone said to me. This was back when we had vinyl records. And I learned how to cue up a record in about 5 seconds from the record rack to the turntable. But when I first started doing that, I thought, how am I going to tell where they want to play cut three on this album? And of course, I pull out my magnifying glass and I find the spot and I lay it down and I cue it up and away we go. And I even had someone say, how come you're using a magnifying glass? And I told them, and I'm legally blind. I said, oh, I didn't know that. that spoke volumes to me that I had done, so to speak, the right thing. Kind of like you just did, you just were who you were, doing what you were doing, and it didn't matter what other people thought. And many of them probably didn't even know of your challenge. And in your case, I would venture they probably did because it was obvious. But I think that's one of the, and I also, this was one other term I came up with, and I'll let you jump in here. And that is my legal blindness, if you will. For a very short period of time following graduating from high school, I became the victim. I said, the state labeled me this. But I rephrased that, and I said that it's a perceived limitation.
Yeah.
And and again, it goes back to one of the philosophies I shared with you earlier. You work with what you have until you get what you want. And in my case, I got 20/50 vision with corrective lenses right after the lens implant. So I'm driving now.
Yeah, and it's only a limitation if you allow it, and you're only a victim if you choose to be.
Yeah.
And those things, you know, I do believe that every setback, every impediment that you have impairment in at any level, it normally develops other skills in within you. We just forget about those. Hey, if you can't see very well, normally you develop other ways of, but, and then if you're sight, like in your case, gets better, now you have extra skills. That happened to me. For example, you just said it, you know, the immediate impression, this has happened to me my whole life, and even more as I was younger, where people will meet me and immediately the first impression is, oh my God, what happened to this guy? And focus so much on my physical appearance and my accident and in my scars.
Mm-hmm.
But without an exception, over and over throughout my entire life, people come back and tell me, you know, that first impression, I looked at you and I go, oh my God, what happened to this guy? 5 seconds into it, once I started talking to you, I forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
I completely forgot. You ignored it so much that it made me ignore it. So when you give importance to something that others perceive as, like you said, a problem
mm-hmm.
or a setback, or see you, if you see yourself as a victim, well, then others will see you as a victim. If you see yourself as successful, as someone who ignores those type of situations and focuses on your objectives, people will follow that. In other words, you know, you cannot let anything stop you from becoming the person that you're supposed to become. I don't care mm-hmm. what it is. So, and over time, of course, you know, you keep adjusting and learning from yourself, and you keep reinventing how you go about in living your life and improving yourself. So,
and at the same time, these perceived limitations, yours or mine, they are part of who we are, or were, however you want to phrase that. And without them, we wouldn't be the people that we are today. I honestly do believe that that is absolutely true. That's why, to me, someone who has a regret is basically saying, if only I could go back and change this. But you can't. What you can do is move forward, embrace it, understand that it isn't something that is permanent. And again, as we've already shared, it's a perceived limitation. And what can I do with that? How can I make that work? I mean, I never ever thought that I would ever record books. And the very first book that I ever recorded was for my first wife. That's how I met her. And she, by the way, was totally blind. It was a book by an author by the name of Og Mandino called The Greatest Miracle in the World. and actually how appropriate that was. And it was given to me by my best friend. He passed away recently. We were best friends for 53 years, went to grade school, high school, college together. He worked in a bookstore. I was going through a low period around Thanksgiving time, and he gave me that book, and I read it, and I wanted to record it. And I was working for another station that broadcast to blind and visually impaired people. It was called a radio reading service. And they broadcast it the week of Christmas, with the fourth segment airing on Christmas Eve. And this woman heard it, this young girl, she was 17 at the time, heard it, wanted a copy of it. And I thought, well, I'll deliver it, you know, and meet somebody new. Little did I know that it would be my first wife. So that was astounding to me, that I was actually allowed to record a book for this radio station, because I didn't have the reading skills. I don't know about you, but I hated getting up in front of class when they said, okay, Richard, I want you to read paragraph 3. I got to go to the bathroom.
I would get paralyzed.
Man. And yet now I'm doing that. So it's amazing what the universe brings up. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that in terms of your personal philosophy. Now, correct me I don't have to worry about you correcting me if I'm wrong, because you will. I figure that the majority of the population of Mexico is predominantly Catholic, and that you were born and raised Catholic.
Yes. Yes.
How is that faith, be it still Catholicism or however it's transformed in your heart and your mind in your life today, how has that faith or belief helped you through those challenges?
Well, it provides you strength. It provides you faith, comfort in those difficult moments where all you have is hoping for the best. There are moments in time when, and it happens to all of us, when everything that can go wrong will go wrong, personally, financially. And those moments are where the only thing you have is to have faith in yourself, faith in your religion and what you believe in, become more spiritual, detach yourself from immediate gratification, and understand that your effort sooner or later will provide you with the reward that you expected. And so that has impacted me. I think it's part of our upbringing. It's part of allowing you, for example, to have a very, very clear understanding between what's ethical and what's not, what's right and what's wrong, both in personal and in business. Something that has helped me a lot in my business career is that I've always been known for doing the right thing. People come to me even to help them identify where the fine line of doing a dumb deal or giving in because I made a mistake, or no, don't give in because you are right, you are correct, and you need to draw the line. I think that I have a very strong ability to identify where to draw that line between what's right, what's wrong, how to operate a business ethically, how not to be taken advantage of. Because also, if you want to succeed, you have to know that you can't just do everything for everyone. And it's a tough world out there. And you also have to apply that level of strength in how you work and how you conduct business. But at the same time, you also have to walk away from that ego, from that stubbornness, and know when you are making mistakes or doing something wrong that needs to be rectified. And when you have that cultural and that religious background that allows you to better make that differentiation, it helps you both in personal and in your business career. I think sooner or later success comes when you're trying to do the right thing, when you're focused on doing the right thing. It's interesting that and this is a fact, every time that I get into some investment or business or some kind of activity, and I do it for the money, somehow it doesn't really work out the way I planned it. And I don't make the money, but I gain a lot of experience. Whenever I go for an experience and for the purpose of learning, for the purpose of helping, for the purpose of contributing and participating with some level of purpose, somehow I end up making money. I don't know why that is, but when I chase the money, I get experience. When I chase experience, I get the money. And I don't know if it's just me or if that's the way, but it does happen that sometimes we focus on the wrong thing. We're trying to just get there and get there quickly without really even understanding where we're headed with this. What is our purpose? What is the objective of the game? And are we making a contribution with whatever it is that we're doing? So
Before
it's a,
we,
yeah.
yeah, before we wrap up here, I wanted to ask you, in all of your experiences, both personal and professional, what would you say is the most important element, the most important part of your of Jose's life?
Well, there are so many, but I'm one of them without the obvious, which is your family, my children who are my whole life, my wife and my kids, which I've made it a point to really spend a lot of quality time. That is one regret I never want to have because I've heard it too many times. They grow so fast. One day you're going to look back and you're going to realize that it was not all about work and about making money. I've heard this so many times that I've not made that mistake. I will never regret having invested and spent and enjoyed so much time with my children. Not, I mean, it's very rare when a day goes by. I mean, unless I had to be out of town for something very important, it's rare when I don't wake up with them and have dinner with them and spend the weekends with them. That is my number one, and I'm enjoying it like crazy. So I know I'm never going to have to regret what most people say, which is I work too much. And I do. I work a lot, but I figured out how to do it at the right time while I was young. A lot of young people leave it for later. They want to have fun. So I identified, no. Let me get the starting of my business and building a little bit of my career and so on and so forth. So yes, that is the number one. But without getting that deep and personal, my biggest objective, what differentiates me is, as we were saying, is my ability to be open-minded and continue to reinvent myself. Even at 55, I'm still humble enough to know that I don't know everything, that I don't necessarily know where I am in my life or where I'm headed. So I continue to learn and to adapt and to adjust. Even this book was cathartic. It was a marvelous experience of me unloading all these thoughts. And I continue to learn what are some of the things that I enjoy. And I actually, I also continue to reaffirm what are some of the things that I don't like to do because I was programmed to be responsible, to be hardworking, to do what I had to do. And for so many years, I invested in doing things the hard way because I was not taught to do things just for fun or for a purpose. I was taught to work hard and to make a living and to support my family. So now I'm starting to truly identify what does Jose really want with his life? What do I really want? It's not just for my family, but for myself. What is my true identity? What is my true purpose? What am I good at? And what do I enjoy? How can I serve others while enjoying it, while being productive, and while continuing some level of success? And combining those, blending those, it's easier said than done. But when you start clarifying your thoughts and understanding what that is, it's incredible. And it starts pivoting your entire life into a better direction. And when you only say, no, I'm going to make money, or no, I'm going to find my purpose, or no, I'm just going to enjoy life, or it's more difficult than when if you try to combine what you're good at, plus what works, plus how I can serve, and what goes very well with my identity. So when I'm continuing to evolve and to perfect the art of being honest with myself, of being clear to myself as to where am I and where am I heading and what do I want out of my life and out of my career. Sometimes we're just so busy going through the motions.
Yeah.
Life. You get up, you get ready, you go to work, and blah, blah, blah. We're rushing, rushing, living, living. And it's become the pattern. We're always in a hurry. We're always stressed. We never sleep enough. And we don't give ourselves time to really plan for where we are, where we want to go, and how do I get there? So clarifying those, that has become a big part of my life.
Well, I like quoting my father, who said to me, probably when I was in my late 20s, early 30s, Richard, find something you love doing because you're going to be doing it for a long time. Don't get stuck like me. Now, my father didn't stay stuck because he went back to college and got his computer programming degree. Now, this was during the 70s. And he would be bringing home boxes of fanfold paper and punch cards. So we had lots of paper to play around with. But I feel as though, and I say this quite often, that I have been in the right place at the right time most of my life, especially when it comes to my career. And we, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we talk about choices. And I think about this a lot more now than ever before. There are choices that I made even as a child, and this may sound very far out to some people, that have actually brought me right here, right now, talking with you. And I didn't know who you were when I was a kid growing up making those choices, but it's like, well, take a look at the pattern. Take a look at some of the choices you've made. Look where you are today. You can actually look if you're, and like you say, you're honest with yourself. If I'm honest with myself, I can see some of those choices that I made and like, ooh, I liked it because I like where I am today. I like being in this conversation with Jose and talking about his book and so forth. Speaking
well,
of
likewise.
Which,
yeah. And I agree. Choices are so important from the time that we are young and we don't truly understand where they're going to take us. But if you do the right thing, if you work and probably not focus so much of where they're going to take you, just trust that doing the right thing and working hard. I always quote, I find it funny, but it's an analogy of the Karate Kid where the wax on, wax off, and the pain defense, and he has no idea. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
do put the work.
Yeah.
Later, you will find out what it's going to do for you. You
mm-hmm.
don't always know immediately what your good intentions and your effort is going to bring you. And sometimes, like you said, those decisions will impact those good decisions that you make. Sometimes take years to come back and provide you with some results, but
yeah.
They do eventually. So
it's wonderful. What website would you like us to go to find out more about you and the work you're doing, as well as obviously getting a copy of your book, which I know is also available through Amazon. But what website shall we direct folks to?
Well, it's my name, joseberlanga.com. It's an interesting question. I talk a lot about this, how I've lived a very anonymous business career away from social media, away from the public eye. And now as I am adapting and I'm modernizing myself, I'm beginning to do a little more social media just because that's the new era. That's a new era. So very soon we will see more videos on my social media accounts. Which are easy to find by my name.
Well,
so,
we will be linked to that website, by the way, so that people can find out more about you and encourage people to get a copy of your book. I always like to ask this question because I also produce audiobooks. Is your book audible yet?
Yes, it is available.
Then I'm going to go there and spend one of my credits and get a copy of your book. Did you record it or did you have a narrator do it?
No. It was narrated. And I need to know. I need to make sure that it's already out. I know the electronic book is out, but I need to. I'm not sure if it's already out. The audio book.
Okay.
But if it's not already out, it's coming.
Well, I will. I will look for it, and if it's not there, I'll wait for it, and I'll get a copy because I love. You know, a lot of people. They say that people don't read anymore. Well, as a legally blind kid, I was reading not only large print books, but I was also listening to what they called talking books for the blind and recordings for the blind. One was textbooks for school. The other was recreational reading. Well, when I was listening to those books, I was reading. Okay, so if you're listening to an Audible book and people say, oh, people don't read anymore, wrong. You are reading. And I love recording. As a matter of fact, I recorded a gentleman's book. It's a mystery drama, a murder mystery called Breakfast Ball. It has a golf theme underlying it, underneath it. And I had so much fun recording that, you know, setting aside all of the editing that I had to do. Because I was getting to read someone else's work and get, you know, I was into their head, similar to these programs. See, I look at these programs as like a Christmas present. I get to open up Jose Berlanga, that gift, and I get to go into his world and I get to learn about who he is and was, and maybe take little bits and pieces of what he shares and maybe incorporate that into my life. And that's what excites me about these programs. So I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the program.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed it. It's been great being here, and hopefully we'll be able to do it again when my next book comes out, because this is not going to be the only one. I'm enjoying this process so much that I've recently completed a second book and I'm going to keep going. So,
Hey, I'm glad to be on the train. Let me tell you. That's wonderful. I'm still trying to finish my first book, but I'll get there and we'll talk about that one of these days too. I do have three final questions that I ask all of my guests. But before I do, I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world where we're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and Wednesdays at 9 a.m. That's our special edition of Tell Me Your Story. We're also on, get this, folks, Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. That's 9 programs, 9 topics, 9 guests, 9 conversations. And you can listen to anyone or all of them because we stream live at those times at richarddugan.com. These are also put up on a podcast through SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music. We're on YouTube where you can watch these conversations. I hope you'll subscribe and click notification so that when I put up a new conversation, you'll be notified and you'll be able to tune in. We also ask that if you can support the work that we're doing here, you'd like to be a part of the changing of the world, if you will, finding those new ways of living. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. Put in richard@richarddugan.com is the email address to whom you're sending. That's richard@richarddugan.com. And one other thing, take some time to go within during this, the decade of perfect vision, into that quiet, peaceful, calm, still place, and listen to that still small voice of inspiration and education, encouragement. And sometimes it'll just be quiet because that's maybe what you need. I know that I could use it a lot more than I take the time to. So please, during this, the decade of perfect vision. With all of that being said, we turn back to our guest and we ask those three final questions, the first of which is, who is Jose Miguel Berlanga?
Father, husband, entrepreneur, investor, writer, and a lot more. But those are the very basic ones. Certainly I enjoy each one of those. Those are the basics.
What is it that gets you up in the morning?
Trying something new and doing something that is difficult. Every day I try to not get complacent and just continuing to do the same thing. I always try to do something new and something difficult to keep my brain going.
And finally, what was your best day?
Oh, when definitely when my children were born. I think that was the most exciting. I've had a lot of I have to say something funny that I'm told that I don't show very much emotion. I've had a lot of wonderful days in my life. I've had a lot of bad days in my life, to the level, to the extent where I rarely show them. When I had a great day, can tell. If I've had a horrible day, I try not to let it show too much. So I'm trying to avoid that level of emotion. But I would say that definitely in my career, there's been so much so many ups and downs that I lose count of which ones were the good days and the bad days. So seeing, definitely my kids gave it a whole new meaning.
Once again, I thank you so much for being with us here on the program, and I do look forward to talking with you again, if not before, when your next book comes out. I always love following our guests and their entrepreneurial as well as writing endeavors, because there's always some new insight to glean, and I thank you so much for sharing today.
Thank you, Richard. Great being here.
And I thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, where we are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.